Hey guys, we're going to get the SummerSlam preview and prediction show started in just a second with our thoughts on Vince McMahon appearing on SmackDown and what exactly that could mean. Him saying again that you'll never see it coming. I have my thoughts on exactly what I think that means. Are Sasha and Bayley showing signs of breaking up? And Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose, the stipulation's changed. So we're going to break that down and a ton more. Let's get it started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? 'Cause Stone Cold said so.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast. It is Saturday, August 22nd, 2020. And yeah, we don't normally do shows on Saturday. Feels weird. Feels weird doing this show on Saturday. But we've got the second biggest pay-per-view of the year for WWE coming tomorrow night via the Thunderdome. I'm going to give you my thoughts on that in just a minute too. But via the Thunderdome, it's not the Amway Center in Orlando. It is the Thunderdome. That's the official location from WWE. So we've got a lot to discuss and a lot to really dive into as we look at this preview and prediction for SummerSlam, especially because I'm starting to get the feeling that WWE is going to do more at this show than they normally would have. And I mean that because they know the ratings have been down and they knew they needed to do something, and they have. They've tried new angles with Retribution. They have done the Raw Underground, and it's creating a buzz. Whether that's a good buzz or not remains to be seen. They've now done the Thunderdome thing, which, you know, let me just talk about that right now. The Thunderdome thing, I appreciate what they're doing. And I actually suggested something like this way back when this pandemic started. Is there a way to get fans virtually there? You know, because I knew that there weren't going to be anybody. There wasn't going to be anybody. And well, for months there wasn't anybody. It was just dead awkward silence. And then you had these NXT trainees show up and pose as WWE fans. And I was very critical of that. While it added to the presentation, and it's great to hear crowd noise, even if it's controlled crowd noise, I was critical of it because I don't think they represent the true voice of the WWE fan, because they're very controlled. They're like state-run radio. You know, they're going to cheer who they're supposed to cheer for. They're going to boo who they're supposed to boo for. And now that we got the Thunderdome, which is a bunch of fans, I don't know how many, hundreds, I guess, of fans in this virtual screen of everyone gets their own little screen as if they're in the audience. And they seemingly cut the audio of these fans. So that my concern was when I heard about this concept, I said, how are they going to do this? Because you're putting a lot of control or a lot of liability on the and power in the hands of fans that you don't know. You don't know what they're going to say in front of a live mic. And yeah, I get why they cut the mic. I get it. At the same time, authentic crowd noise, there is no substitute for. There is no substitute for authentic crowd reaction. Now, they've clearly piped in some crowd noise that was it wasn't cheesy. I won't say that. I appreciate the effort, and I know what they're trying to do, that you know, you got to have some kind of crowd noise. You can't just have these blank faces, hundreds of faces looking at you with no noise. But isn't that what the fans are there for? It's not just the visual. It's the audio. To me, as fans, that's even more important than the fans physically being there. So I guess what I'm saying is, if I had an option of a controlled environment where you have people live there versus a Thunderdome, I would choose live controlled fans. And it's because the audio is immediate. The reaction's immediate. It's not easy to focus in on one certain square, because by the time you focus on somebody that is in that big screen, they flip the screen or they're on a different camera angle, or it's I don't know how to put it. It's visually nice because you're like, oh, cool, fans, kind of, but you don't get to hear them, and that's the whole point of fans being there. And if you're sitting at home, and if anybody gets this opportunity, I mean, I know you can sign up to be in the Thunderdome, I guess, as one of the hundreds of screens they have. You're not as invested sitting at home, which means even if something happens, you're going to probably sit there. I mean, I saw a lot of fans just kind of sit there, even after AJ Styles lost the Intercontinental Championship on SmackDown. Just sitting there. And it's... So I get from a visual perspective, it's nice to see new faces of real fans. Yes, they are real fans. At the same time, I miss the audio. The audio from fans is really what makes it, even more than the visual. So I get it. I appreciate it. It's going to draw more viewers, but for how long? I don't think the Thunderdome thing's going anywhere. From everything I've read, this is their new residency. They've set up residency. They are there for the long haul, for pay-per-views, for television, and this Thunderdome format's going to continue. Now, I'm not suggesting that the Thunderdome should allow audio from hundreds of feeds. You just can't. It would be a mess. You can't. You just can't. I mean, maybe a way is to have preset boos and cheers from fans, right? Like, built into this Thunderdome app or however it's done, build in boos and cheers so that everyone gets a voice that's in the audience, but they have a very controlled way to interact, boo or cheer. And that to me is how I would do it, so that you're not putting yourself at risk of a fan saying something they shouldn't on live TV, of all the different random audio of what could be going on where someone's sitting at home. You don't have to deal with that. You have a very controlled boo or cheer, right? Or clap. Maybe there's like a clap, a clapping button or something, and you can make it fairly muted, so not, you know, a single person cheering or booing would sound exactly the way it should in a normal audience setting. Just a thought. So here we are, guys. Though it's SummerSlam, thank you for joining me once again. You can follow me on Instagram at WWE_podcast, and we are going to be here with you. My God, I think 7-8 times this coming week with tonight, the preview and prediction. Tomorrow, I'm going to be doing some kind of like live posting and stuff on Instagram. You guys know I don't have Twitter right now. I've been, I don't know, infinitely banned. We'll see how long that goes. But you can also email the show, by the way, after the show, during the show, at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to get your voice in, and I'm sure many of you will after SummerSlam, which I think is going to be a very eventful show, do that at either, you can send me a voicemail via your phone to my email, but if you'd rather just call the darn number, here's the show's number if you want to get your voice on the show. It's 518-952-0247, 518-952-0247. You can get yourself on the show, and just try to keep it to 1 to 2 minutes. If it goes beyond three, it cuts you off. So please try to keep it to a couple of minutes. Whether it's a rant, try to keep it PG as well. And I'd love to be able to get you on the show. I'm sure many of you will have an opinion coming after tomorrow night. I'll just put it that way. And also, as far as announcements go on the show, again, we will be doing a collaborative review with the Botch Guy on Tuesday. I'm sorry, Monday night, we'll be releasing a collaborative effort between myself and the Botch Guy, which, by the way, go subscribe to him on YouTube. Like, he's awesome, high energy, and very on top of things, gets content out very quickly. So if you're seeing something on Raw and you're wondering how he feels, he probably already has posted it up, and he's got a very passionate view about wrestling. Give him a subscribe on YouTube. I'm telling you, you won't regret it. And on Tuesday, Mary Grader joins the show to review Raw and close out SummerSlam. And then on Wednesday, Chris Van Vliet will be on the show to talk wrestling, of course, and you know how he got to where he is and whatever else comes up. I mean, that's pretty much it. Yeah, if you have two wrestling fans talking to one another, it's impossible to run out of things to talk about. I'm pretty sure that's scientifically provable. So Chris Van Vliet will be here on Wednesday. So a pretty jam-packed week. And then, of course, you guys know the rest of the week. It's AEW and NXT, which, by the way, the NXT review will be up tomorrow. So I don't think there will be a day this entire week that we don't have at least one show posted, including Friday, which Anthony DeMarco had his debut episode of WWE Rivalries in Kane versus Shane McMahon. If you didn't check that out, you got to check it out. You guys know Anthony. He's been on the show for a long time as a co-host, and he was interested in doing a WWE Rivalries podcast of his own. And again, he covered Shane versus Kane. Shane McMahon versus Kane. That way it doesn't rhyme so so much. And I think it was well done. I've gotten great feedback, and he'll be dropping one every single Friday, dropping a new episode. So check that out. Again, guys, we're going to be here every single day. So, all righty. Well, let's get this show on the road here. And I have some quick thoughts on SmackDown. I know we have a SmackDown team that reviews the show, so I'm not going to go segment by segment. But some of the things that stood out to me, I mean, how can we not talk about Braun Strowman and The Fiend? And what opened SmackDown was Vince McMahon in front of the Thunderdome. Didn't say a whole lot. And boy, does he look older every single time we see him, doesn't he? And you would say, well, it's Father Time. But it's like accelerating on Vince. It's as if all of these years have finally caught up with him. And he is in some kind of time loop where he ages quicker than the rest of us. And it's just the way every time I see him, like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And maybe it's because I'm just burned with the image of Vince in the 90s and early 2000s of what he should look like versus what he does today. And just my thought. But he's out there talking about the Thunderdome quickly and then is interrupted very, very quickly by The Fiend, who stares him down, sidesteps him. Vince tries to walk around The Fiend, and The Fiend won't let him. Braun Strowman comes out, Strowman Express, by the way, I'm not a fan of that. I get what they're doing. They need to move away from the Monster Among Men because that is beyond beaten to death. But he's suddenly a freight train. I don't know. I mean, maybe it works for some. And if they sell a bunch of t-shirts, great. It's just not how I would have done it. But everyone's got an opinion. Anyway, Braun Strowman comes out and makes the save, so to speak, before Retribution, who eludes the worst crack security team ever hired in the history of time, of Retribution coming out. And again, Michael Cole alluded that there's more members now, and there is no defined number of members of Retribution. And maybe that's the point. I don't know. But he also said several times, we don't even know what they're here for. We don't know what they want. Which I've been saying on this show for a couple of weeks now, that we don't know what they want. We have no idea, other than they have destroyed any and everything that has to do with WWE. They've put a WWE symbol and put a strike through it, meaning they just want retribution on the company for some kind of wrongdoing that they have had happen to them, or belief that they have had. As we all know, everyone today is a professional victim. And I don't just mean in pro wrestling. Everyone's just taught to be a victim. I'll leave it at that. But we get this Retribution team, this group, I don't even know what to call them, surround the ring with Bray Wyatt and Braun Strowman involved, who are about to face off and maybe square off. Bray Wyatt does his hocus pocus, leaves the ring, disappears. Braun Strowman gets beat down, and to be honest, I'm surprised he didn't put up more of a fight. I get it's like 12-on-1. I understand that. I mean, that's not fair to for anybody, but at least put up some kind of fight. I expected when they piled on him that it was going to be one of those deals where he just, you know, bursts out, and it didn't happen. And it felt a whole lot, and I know that many of you may or may not watch The Matrix. This image came to my mind, and this is what I was expecting to happen. The Matrix Reloaded, the second Matrix, which came out in like 2004 or 3, something like that, where Neo is being piled on by the Agent Smith that copied himself. And he gets piled on. They just keep stacking themselves on top of Neo, who eventually just kind of bursts out and they all go flying. Like, that's what I expected. If you don't know what I'm talking about, then you're like, Matrix is stupid. Then you're not going to understand. But for those of us seen the Matrix trilogy, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And that's what I expected. And Braun Strowman, who's been built up, he's a monster. And he just gets beat down pretty simply. I get it's 12-on-1, but still. Retribution, still no answers. And if you're trying to also make a secret entrance, why flicker the lights? Is someone over there with the, chuckling, switching the light on and off? If you're going to make a surprise attack and you're not supposed to be there anyway, why would you give anybody a heads up? Why? I mean, this retribution angle, I'm sorry to say, right now, I've turned sour on it. And I know that's, it's one night. But, I don't know, it's been a pattern now. This is not just one night. This has been a pattern since their debut. I said I'd give it a chance. And you know what? I have so far. I'm still on board with it. I'm not turning on it completely. I've just soured on it. That doesn't mean I don't think it could still be really good. That doesn't mean that I am a fair wind or a fair weather fan that only supports something that's going really well. I am a patient fan, and I'm still on board for it. My point, though, is if the angle ended today, I would be like, this was terrible, right? This was awful. But if you're only reading chapter 2 of, say, 20 out of the book, then that's not fair. You should read the whole book and then judge that based on what you've read in its entirety. So that's where I'm looking at it. And because it's so new, I'm still understanding and I'm willing to see where this goes. But we have seen nothing. We've heard nothing. And the plausibility of this group, there's so many of them, being able to come out and go undetected, which if anybody's wearing a mask and a zip-up black hoodie, that should be your first clue. How so many of them able to slip in, not just to the Performance Center, but also the Amway Center, undetected from this crack security team of WWE that spends hundreds of millions of dollars every single year but can't seem to find decent security to protect their own superstars and staff, are consistently coming in. Consistently. And I get it's pro wrestling, but they're not even trying anymore. They're not even trying with this retribution angle of plausibility. That's why I've soured. And you know, I could turn around next week or after SummerSlam and be like, okay, got it. This is good stuff. I'm not saying that can't happen, but it's starting to wear very thin on me of not hearing any message from them and the plausibility of this thing of no security at this point, police, because if you're attacking employees that are not competitors in the ring, that's a unsafe work environment that they could get sued for plausibly. And why wouldn't you have, hey, like actual security guards that aren't look intimidating? I don't get it. The security's not the one chasing them out. The superstars are, the wrestlers are coming out leading the charge was Big E last night, which was nice to see. It's kind of a symbol of, hey, yeah, Big E's a leader, right? And that's fine. And so they come out and even the odds and clear the ring of Retribution, who ends up hightailing it out of the arena, presumably. And then you have Braun Strowman turn on, was it Shorty G? No, I forget who he turned on, Shorty G or somebody, and slammed them down and then left out of anger. And, you know, the announcers chalked it up to, he's just focused on the Fiend. It's anger, frustration out of the Fiend. And, so that was a little weird. And nonetheless, we also, don't worry, guys, got our first two matches of the night ending in a roll-up. Oh, yeah. Big E versus Sheamus after some great back and forth roll up. I don't get it. And then we had Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro defeat the Lucha House Party this way. I mean, I don't understand the roll up. I think it's the only way I've really broke down the roll up victory analysis or the roll up victory method by WWE is that they don't want to do a DQ because people, you know, complain about DQs, and I understand why. DQ finishers are fine if they're not overused, but then they went to overusing the roll up. And they use it, I think, in a way that's like, okay, we'll give you a finish. It's not there's a DQ and no winner, but a roll-up is suggestive that they just kind of got lucky, that they were in the right place at the right time, and, oh, they just got that. They just were able to get the three count. And it's not like hitting your finish and winning. There's a difference. So they do all that great stuff when all they really need to do is go for roll-ups, because apparently that is the most single most devastating maneuver in WWE right now is the roll-up or the sunset flip. I don't care what variation, the schoolboy, whatever. The roll-up is, I mean, just look at the 24/7 title. How is 99% of the how are 99% of those title changes happening? Via a roll-up from behind. I mean, it's so it's just it's too much. I can't deal with, you know, you see all these great things, great moves, great match happening, and how many times have you seen it end in a roll-up? It's not the suicide dives that, you know, although I'm not a fan of them. It's not the, you know, the crazy moonsaults that happen. You know, slamming somebody's head into a mat. None of that. No. That's not how you win. It ends up in a damn roll-up. I mean, come on. It's... Yeah. Anyway. But moving on here. Then we get a... I mean, we got a beat-the-clock challenge between Sasha, Bayley, and Naomi. And Naomi ended up losing to Sasha, but then beating Bayley. I don't know what to make of this. I mean... It was already set who was going to do what, and then Corey Graves comes in and bumbles, stumbles, and then tells them that it's just a suggestion. Okay, well, great. Why are we doing this when it's already been determined who's going first and who's not? I don't know. I mean, it's nice to see a beat-the-clock challenge happening because we haven't seen it in a while. It just felt a little bit, I don't know. It felt a little unnecessary, but it's good to see Naomi out there at least. In her in her gear, and she's very marketable. She's very flashy. I mean, that's what a babyface does. I find her a little obnoxious at times. Maybe that's because they haven't done a whole lot of character development with Naomi. We know she was with the Funkasaurus, with Brodus Clay. Remember that? She was part of the one half of the Funkadelics or whatever. And then she grew into Naomi and grew into Field of Glow, and she's Jay Uso's wife. Forgive me. And so that's her identity. She's one of the Uso's twins' wives. But what do we know about her? If you don't watch Total Divas, what the hell do you know about Naomi? You're going to Field of Glow. That's really catchy for saying, I'm going to kick your ass. Oh, okay, we get it. And you're flashy. You got great entrance music. Very high energy, great, but nothing. She's very one dimensional. I need more from a Naomi, which is probably fine. Why I find her very obnoxious at times. So give me some depth. It's nice to see her get a victory and not get, you know, slammed twice by Bayley and Sasha. But give us something. And there's just nothing to Naomi. It's because I know there's more. We don't ever get a very good promo out of her. Maybe because they haven't given her the opportunity. It's just kind of like standard. Like, you know, gibberish that's, you know, it is what it is, but it doesn't really grab you. So, all right. Well, the Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose thing, by the way, what's happening? What's happening? I mean, I'm fine with this because honestly, I don't want to see either woman bald. I think they look fine just the way they are. I also don't have a vested interest in seeing, that's going to show her by shaving her head. Yeah. Right, because, like, you know, if you shave your head, like, hey, your hair's growing back. It's not permanent. Mandy Rose this week ended up saying in an interview with, I think it was Kayla Braxton, and she said that, you know, I'm going to choose to believe that woman, the girl, my friend that I spent 5 years with, that I was inseparable with, is still there, that she's still out there somewhere, and to put all of this behind us, basically saying, we don't have to do this. I'm back and forth on that notion. I get it that your babyface should show heart, should show compassion, should always do what's right. And at the same time, I'm thinking, you're backing out now? That statement should have been made about 3 months ago. That statement should have been made at the beginning of this, not at the end. Why? After everything she's done, and you're just going to basically wimp out? It was not a good look for Mandy Rose, who has been bested by Sonya Deville almost every time that they've met. I mean, it's clear here who the star is. And outside of Mandy Rose, she's a bikini model. She's incredibly attractive, all that, which to me is not important when I'm watching wrestling. But Sonya Deville here is the star. And I hope that at SummerSlam, Sonya Deville comes out on top. I don't know what to make of this yet. I'll give you my predictions on the whole show in just a minute. But for her, Sonya Deville come out and say that, I'm upping the ante. Every time she gets on the mic, you just pay attention, don't you? Like, Sonya Deville is such a rising star. I think she's going to capture the SmackDown Women's Championship next year, sometime in 2021. I think after a babyface takes it from Bayley and holds it for a while, Sonya Deville could be the one to knock it off of her. And that's what I hope happens. Okay, one last thing that I want to touch on. Well, a couple things quickly, because I know you guys want the predictions. Is AJ Styles losing to Jeff Hardy? And AJ Styles took a cheap shot during the opening part of the show by attacking Jeff Hardy in his leg from behind, giving him an advantage during his match, or hoping that Jeff doesn't compete at all. And Jeff was shown backstage. He eventually gets a brace. He's able to come out and compete. And throughout the match, he's showing the signs of the knee damage that was done earlier in the night with a shot from behind. And he was selling it nice. You kind of thought that this would be the way that AJ, he would win. And then you'd say, Jeff Hardy, it's okay that he lost because he had an excuse. He was attacked from behind. And instead, we got AJ Styles losing the Intercontinental Championship to Jeff Hardy. Now, don't get me wrong. Jeff Hardy, there's no other way about it. No two ways about it. He's a future Hall of Famer with his brother, Matt. He, to me, was the bigger star of the duo. I think that's also a testament to why he's here and Matt's not. But I also think that this Jeff Hardy, the one that's, oh, live through me. Oh, look at everything I've overcome. Oh, like he said in the bar fight, I'm that window over there. Did anybody else remember this weird thing he said? Sitting at the bar with Sheamus before they fought? I'm that window over there. I'm this table here. I'm everything, man. Like, what the hell does that mean? I'm sorry, I can't get behind this soft, very, sponsor, happy type of character of Jeff. When I mean sponsor happy, I mean, this is exactly what, if you're a sponsor of WWE and you care that they stay within the PG rules and that they put out a good message and make everyone smile, this is exactly the kind of nonsense you would love to see from WWE, as a character who, stands up and does what's right and is, to me, this just soft version of Jeff. I don't know. I get he's a legend. Absolutely, and I'd put him in the Hall of Fame. I just don't like this transparently soft version of him that has come out. And he's you're taking a negative and making it into a positive. Well, he's overly positive about everything. Whether it's in real life, whether I know people like this or not, it makes me vomit. And it's not because I'm a negative person. Like, generally, I'm pretty positive. But don't give me this fake positivity garbage, right? That you're trying to make, put out a positive message. I mean, shut up, really. I mean, I've seen this happen with baby faces in WWE. Like, I'm not a fan of the transparently corporate friendly versions of their character, if that makes sense. I don't know how else to put it. But Jeff Hardy in ring, I mean, absolutely, this guy's a legend. And having him win the Intercontinental Championship, having him win, oh, and by the way, having him win after he did the swanton that he was, not even able to do his whisper in the wind just a moment earlier, and yet he flawlessly pulled off the swanton bomb, which, I can guarantee you requires a very healthy knee joint to do. So Jeff Hardy is your new Intercontinental Champion. I'm very surprised at this. Very. It's not that, again, I'm not crapping on Jeff. I'm just not a fan of his soft character. But AJ Styles losing, it felt like a big deal when he won it because I said, oh, this is going to be a great long run. And it ends with Jeff Hardy after a week notice. And he drops the belt. Why? Right? Like, what is happening? So could something be happening with AJ that we don't know about? Maybe. Right? Like, could something big be happening with AJ Styles that they remove the belt for him so that he could go on to something bigger and better? It could be. I mean, absolutely could be. You know, people have speculated, who's the leader of Retribution? Maybe AJ Styles. I mean, it's possible. You also have to look at The Miz, who came out very, very late at the end of that show. He came out very late, almost to the point of making sure everything was done before he had to come out and maybe, you know, put up a fight and do any, get his hands dirty. So maybe it's just him being a coward, or it's WWE subtly telling you, yeah, The Miz is, The Miz might be behind something here. There's an inside job going on. And I, you know what, if it is The Miz who is somehow associated with Retribution, I'd be okay with it. I'm not, again, boy, I feel like I'm being really negative right now, but SmackDown was a weird show. It was weird. But The Miz and Morrison, they're obnoxious to a point of not heel heat. They're obnoxious to the point of just, they are an embodiment of everything wrong with pro wrestling in 2020. And I mean that in a way of character. I'm not saying in-ring. Their characters are just, I don't know. I don't know how to describe Miz and Morrison other than just, if there weren't so few tag teams, I would say split them up. And Morrison is just put back in the place that he basically left WWE. I don't know. I'm going to move on to some other positive stuff. And you know what? Let's just get to the damn predictions because that's what we're here for. All right, let's jump into the predictions. And start right here with what I just talked about. Sonya Deville versus Mandy Rose in a no DQ loser leaves WWE match. No longer hair versus hair. This one's not easy. I haven't read if someone's contract is up and the other one isn't. So I'm going blind on this based on what I've seen. It's purely on storyline, not on internet dirt. And I'm going to say Mandy Rose is out. Because Sonya Deville is a star on the rise. Mandy Rose kind of is what she is. And I think that having Mandy Rose gone, or, and this is from WWE, not just SmackDown, loser leaves WWE, you know, basically this talent ain't big enough for the both of us type of match. Having Mandy Rose gone, I think, would be a positive. And I mean that in the way of, I think Sonya Deville embodies what is great about the women's division, and Mandy Rose, while she has some great qualities, I don't think is the full package in terms of what the future of this business looks like with the women's division, with somebody, you know, the face of that division. I don't see Mandy Rose doing that. So I'll leave it there. So I think Sonya Deville wins. Moving on to Apollo Crews versus MVP for the United States Championship. This is, again, not easy. I'm going to say that Apollo Crews retains because I think that there still needs to be time for him to establish himself. It's almost, we've gotten so many start stops from Apollo that there needs to be some kind of continuance. There needs to be some momentum, to use WWE's overused word of the year, of the decade, of momentum for Apollo Crews. And MVP to me feels like he's more suited in the role of manager and mouthpiece than he is as champion. So Apollo Crews retains. The Street Profits versus Andrade and Angel Garza. Now, I would like Andrade and Angel Garza to capture the belts. However, the Street Profits, I think, based on the fact that Montez Ford was proven to be poisoned, are due to get revenge. and I think that they'll retain as well against Andrade and Angel Garza. I'm not very confident. I'd put my confidence level on this at about like a 5 on 1 to 10. So it's not easy because you can make a case for both. But I think the Street Profits probably retain here, even though I would have them drop the belt so damn fast to Andrade and Angel Garza. And that's how I would do it. And I'm not confident at all on this, but that's how I'd do it. The only thing that scares me about this is the Street Profits have had the championship for some time now. And Andrade and Angel Garza, I think, to switch it up would be no better time than on the second biggest stage of the year at SummerSlam. Big things always happen at SummerSlam. Seth Rollins versus Dominic Mysterio in a street fight. This, to me, is going to be a very, I would say, non-technical matchup. Nor should it be in a street fight, based on the on all the backstory on this. I expect Seth Rollins to win here. He needs to win this match. If Dominic wins and it's decisive, or if it's no interference and there's no shenanigans, where, you know, it's really Rey Mysterio who's doing the dirty work and his son capitalizes, if that happens, that's a very telltale sign of Seth Rollins. I mean, where he's positioned. I know there needs to be a strong, strong outing for Dominic. And they're, you know, rightfully so. I mean, he is the son of Rey Mysterio. You need to establish him. There's no better time. There's no second chance at a first impression. But it's Seth freaking Rollins. You cannot beat Seth Rollins and have the fans not expect to say, what the hell is going on? And so I think it's a brutal match. I think Seth gets what's coming to him. I think that he gets lashed. But ultimately, maybe it's AOP that return. And end up taking out Dominic and his father. So I think Seth Rollins wins. All right. Then we get SmackDown Women's Championship, Bayley versus Asuka, which I actually believe could open the show. Right? I think this could actually open the show because you want to space these two matches out, these two women's championship matches. So to me, I predict this one to open the show. And it's Bayley versus Asuka. Now, here's the thing. I think the break between Bayley and Sasha probably is going to be taking some time, but the fact that they focused on it heavily this past week on SmackDown was surprising. But I think Bayley retains in what's going to be a very good match. Very good match with Bayley and Asuka. Bayley retains. That SmackDown Women's Championship means the most out of all the gold that they're holding right now. So Bayley and Asuka, I think, is going to be, could be one of the best matches, if not the match of the night. If done right and given enough time. So Bayley retains against Asuka, probably by hook and crook, to retain that championship. And Bayley will move on to surpass a year. Although we have Payback in a week, which is insane. Okay, Sasha Banks versus Asuka. Now we get the Raw Women's Championship. This one scares me a little more. Originally, you know, I was coming out of this saying that I don't, you know, they're not going to do this right now. They need to have these Sasha and Bayley retain their belts. But to be honest, I think Sasha loses to Asuka here. I think that this could be the beginning of the end for this friendship. That's going to take a while and burn slowly, which has been burning for quite some time, and end up maybe at the end of the year, finally in a blow off. And that's how I think this is going to end. And so I'm not confidently saying this. This is not an easy card to predict. I say Asuka wins. And, you know, again, I could easily see Sasha winning and having Bayley and Sasha come out next night on Raw and just gloat again and again and again. And what is going on? Nobody can take them down. They still have all the gold. So this one scares me. I'm going to say Asuka, only for the fact I think, and I said they're going to go for a slow burn, but I think that slow burn has to start with a spark, right? And if they're starting with a spark, it's got to be with somebody losing a championship. And to me, the Raw Women's Championship, out of the two main belts, means less. Certainly the women's tag team belts means much, even less than that, but singles championship wise. Okay, Universal Championship, Braun Strowman versus The Fiend. I don't know what to make of this. I really don't. And I'm thinking this is going to be a match that is a lot of kickouts of finishers. Because that's what The Fiend does. That's what The Fiend is known for, that you can't take him down, you can't destroy him. He is impenetrable, unbeatable. So there's going to be a lot of that. I think Alexa Bliss also makes a showing here. And could you have Braun turn back to babyface? Because we all think he's just kind of playing a fake heel right now. Could Alexa Bliss actually be responsible for The Fiend winning? I think that's more likely. So I think we have a championship change with The Fiend defeating Braun Strowman because of Alexa Bliss and her interference. What's that interference? Could it be a low blow? Could it be her showing affection to Braun to just distract him so that The Fiend gains an upper hand and ends up putting Braun Strowman down and probably passing out? That's probably how this thing's ending, by the way, in a stoppage. Well, I shouldn't say that because that's bringing back really bad memories of Hell in a Cell from last year with Seth. But could it be that he passes out? He doesn't tap out. He doesn't technically lose. He just kind of passes out from the mandible claw. That, to me, is more likely, more protective of Braun. And Alexa Bliss shows her true colors and aligns herself with The Fiend. How about that? I like that. But expect a stupid amount of kickouts of finishers. I mean, it's going to be, you know, just power move after power move after power move after kickout, 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 kickout. And then a couple more kickouts. And then when you think you're done, there'll be another round of kickouts. So that's just what it's going to be with The Fiend. So I don't expect a 5-star match out of this. I just don't, nor should anybody. But here's one that could be also match of the night. And that is Drew McIntyre versus Randy Orton for the WWE Championship. This one is interesting. And I alluded to it at the beginning of the show. I said that Vince and really the announcers all keep saying, you'll never see it coming. You'll never see it coming, which we're all supposed to believe is just a play on Randy Orton's RKO. I think it's bigger. I think it's bigger than that. And Retribution, I think, is going to make a big impact in this show. Maybe they'll ruin a championship match. Maybe they'll reveal something. Maybe they'll find a leader. Somebody will take a mask off. I think something like that is absolutely possible. They need to make an impact on this show. Wouldn't make sense if they don't. But I think possibly what that something bigger is Brock Lesnar. That's my thought, is that Brock Lesnar shows up, costs Drew McIntyre his championship after maybe he Claymore kicks Randy Orton. You think Randy Orton's finally going to get what it's got coming to him. And Brock Lesnar comes out, F5s, you know, Drew McIntyre, referee's down, and Randy Orton ends up hitting an RKO or just crawls over and covers him for the win. And you have a new WWE champion. That's how I think this ends, with Randy Orton holding his hands up high with the championship. And I hope it happens. I really do. I love Drew as champion. I think he's done a great job. But I think Randy Orton is so hot that it's worth the sacrifice. I really think it's worth the sacrifice. And I think Brock Lesnar couldn't get involved, probably will. And I also think that Retribution plays a big part in this. And what their role exactly is remains to be seen. But it's going to be an interesting SummerSlam. Don't forget to check me out on Instagram at WWE_podcast and leave us a voicemail at 518. Let me get that number here. I'm clicking around here. 518-952-0247. If you want to hear and get your voice on the show with a rant, a question, a comment about SummerSlam, I'll be putting those on my show on Monday. So, and Tuesday, I get tons of voicemails from you guys, except for this week. It's been eerily quiet. I think it's the calm before the storm. So, lots to come, guys. Again, tomorrow, an AEW review, because I know AEW is pushed to Saturday night. And then, of course, you guys know the rest of the schedule. It's every single day, every day. Head on over to our website at wwpodcast.com. And also on Apple Podcasts, Google, anywhere you can find podcasts. Give us a rating and review. It really helps out the show. And big interviews coming up, big collaborations next week, lots of content. And just so you know, not this coming week, obviously, but the week after, starting a week from now, I'll be on vacation. What that means is that you'll still get your content from your normal co-hosts, meaning you'll get the Friday edition of Rivalries from Anthony DeMarco. You'll get the SmackDown review from Greg and Jeff, or I'm sorry, Brian and Jeff. And then on, let's see what other shows. Oh, AEW 2 and NXT. You'll get all of those coverages as normal, but I will be limited in my actual contribution to my feed following the following week. So starting on August 29th through like September 3rd or 4th or so, I will be away, but I will have a mic with me. So if something major pops on, I promised my wife that I would like actually be present and not be recording at all, which I will be true to that. But I have a portable mic that I can plug into my phone. And if something major happens, I have to pop on. So, but all in all, likelihood you won't be hearing from me a ton other than posting the normal feed of other stuff beyond what I normally cover. So keep that in mind as we roll on. But this coming week, the next 7 days, it's going to be a crap load of content. So get ready for SummerSlam. I hope you've enjoyed this. Thanks so much for listening, guys. As always, I'll talk to you soon.